He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz, Julian Council producing. This is Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can hang out with us on Twitter at Braden Gall, at Jason Fitz. You guys know the drill out there. Love the interaction with everybody. And we're continuing to break down everything today that the Mariota injury may or may not mean for the Tennessee Titans. I'd love to get a little national perspective on things and get a little bit of a concept of outside of our bubble what people are thinking of the Titans in general. So to help us break all that down from Yahoo Shutdown Corner, Frank Schwab joins us. Frank, thanks for taking some time. When you saw the result, 57-14 on Sunday, we were shocked in Nashville to see that happen. Were you shocked?
Oh, yeah. The Texans, what, they set their franchise record for points when they had 43? That's right. Like, I think I saw that graphic, and then they added on two more touchdowns. Yeah, of course I was shocked. I was, you know, one of the national people. There were many of us, many people, period, who really liked the Titans coming into the year, thought they were going to take over the AFC South. And as I wrote in my power rankings today, they had a real chance to make a statement on Sunday at Houston, and they made a statement, all right. It wasn't a good one, but they made a statement. I was shocked. I was shocked at how bad they played. I was shocked at how overmatched they looked. And based on how Deshaun Watson played, you almost have to do a 180 at this point and say the Houston Texans are a clear favorite in the AFC South, and now the Titans are chasing them. And based on what we saw Sunday, they might be chasing them and be far behind right now.
So is that just like you said, you're obviously basing this all off of one game, and that was a pretty ugly, nasty, ridiculously bad game. I don't have enough adjectives for that. But this NFL world is a world where you kind of have to crumple up each week and move on. Is the injury the bigger concern for you to Marcus Mariota, or is it actually – I just think that's – because through 3 weeks they had played pretty good football on both sides of the ball in all three games. You're saying that one performance wipes away all three, or is it the injury that concerns you?
I think a combination of both. The injury, look, if Matt Castle is a quarterback, he's not going to win many games. And I know the schedule gets a little bit easier for the next 5 weeks maybe. I looked at it quick last night, and I noticed that schedule does get pretty easy coming here. But if Matt Castle is a quarterback, you're not winning much. I mean, I don't care who you play. He's just not really capable of leading them too much. But I just think if we look back at the first three games, yeah, the Titans played okay. But there's still a Titans team I think there's some skepticism about because they haven't done it in a long time. Yeah, last season was a nice growth season for them. But you wanted to see them take a step forward. And then for them to just get dismantled like that, you look back at the first 3 weeks and you start to think, well, okay, they lost at home to a Raiders team that's 2-2. All right, they kind of, you know, the Seahawks win was nice, although the Seahawks haven't had a dominant performance yet. And then the Jaguars game, they kind of struggled for a first half there. So you look at it and you say, well, who are the Titans at this point? I don't know. It doesn't erase everything they've done. It doesn't mean they're going to go 4-12 or anything. But I think if you're being realistic right now, based on what we've seen, based on where they stand, based on how good Deshaun Watson is, the Texans are a clearly better team. It's not to say the Titans can't improve, can't catch them. But if you're being honest with yourself, the Texans are a clear favorite in the division right now.
We're talking to Frank Schwab from Yahoo Shutdown Corner. So, Frank, with that being said, who stands out as clearly the better teams to you? I know Kansas City, big win last night. Who else stands out to you in the AFC as really a dominant football team right now?
And that's the thing about this season. I mean, you touched on it when we're just now. It's the Etch-a-Sketch season where you just turn it over after every week and you shake it and it's a blank. I mean, I was doing, as I mentioned, power rankings. I was doing it last night, and for a while there it looked like the Chiefs might lose. I had no idea who I was going to put number one, because every single 3-1 team, you can make an argument for another team that's better than them just based on who beat who and where and whatnot. I think that this season is going to be defined by extreme parity and no down in teams. The Patriots don't look any good. The Steelers haven't really played that great. I'm not even sure the Chiefs are that great, but they're clearly the best in football right now. I mean, it's just, you look and you know, the Raiders, obviously, with the car injury, aren't the same team. The Broncos have gone away from home once, and they lost to the Bills. I mean, who do you trust? Who do you trust among any of these teams right now? And I think that that's just leading us to this, it's just a crazy season where there's no really good team, and there's just one truly awful team, and that's the Browns. And that's it. I mean, everything else is just kind of you're just jumbling it every week.
Which, and along those same lines, which one of those outcomes was the most sort of legitimate? The Rams on the road against Dallas, the Buffalo Bills on the road against Atlanta, Carolina on the road against New England?
I really think it was the Rams. I think the Rams are for real. Not to mention power rankings again, but you brought it up. I led this week to talk about the five reasons the Rams are for real this year, you know, compared to last year. They started 3-1 last year, too, but this is just different. I think McVay is just such an upgraded coach. He's changed that entire organization. Jared Goff looks like a real quarterback. Todd Gurley looks like he did as a rookie. They're running an offense that looks like it's from this century. It's amazing the transformation in Los Angeles with the Rams. And that, you know, that's not to say they're going to go on and win 13 games or anything, but I think that that's real. I think what we've seen from the Rams so far is legit. I think they're going places. You look at the Falcons' loss, and it's like, well, okay, you lost Julio and Mohamed Sanu in the first half. That just screws up your game plan so much. And I still don't know what to make of the Patriots. No idea. My mind is sitting here telling me, don't write them off. We've done that before, and we watched them bounce back. They've won double-digit games. I believe it's 14 years in a row or 13 or something like that. Don't write them off. But their defense is not the worst defense in football. It's on pace to be the worst defense in football history. So I don't know what to make of the Patriots. I can't tell you whether the Panthers going in and beating them is legit or not, because I just don't know what to make of New England.
We're talking to Frank Schwab from Yahoo Shutdown Corner. You wrote an interesting piece yesterday praising Tom Petty for his halftime performance at Super Bowl. What was that, Super Bowl 17, I think it was?
42. The Giants-Patriots in 2000.
Oh, yeah, not even close.
2007 season, the 18-1 Patriots game.
So,
yeah.
So, Petty, where does he rank in your halftime performances? You know, speaking of rankings, where does he rank in your halftime performances?
You know, I think that, to me, U2 is always going to be the number one just because of the names when they're played Streets Have No Name at the Superdome right after 9/11. That, I'll never be able to watch that and not, you know, feel it. Prince was obviously unbelievable in the rain in Miami. I thought Katy Perry put on a heck of a show. I'm not the biggest Katy Perry fan in the world, but she really was good. So was Lady Gaga last year. I put Tom Petty clearly in top five. It was just, I saw Tom Petty at Red Rocks. I live in Denver. Saw him at Red Rocks on, you know, right after Memorial Day, and it was just fun music. Good, you know, you're just happy the whole time, and that was his halftime show. It wasn't this crazy, you know, all these, you know, side things going on and these crazy effects or whatnot. It was just Tom Petty and Heartbreakers coming out and playing four awesome songs and you're feeling happy at the end. And that, to me, that was Tom Petty, and that's what I wrote about today. And I just a sad day, just sad to see somebody like him go. I feel the exact same way last year when Prince went, and it just sucks. There's just no way around that.
You guys can follow him on Twitter at Yahoo Schwab. You can check out all of his power ranking stuff there. Also, the great article on Petty. Frank, thanks for taking the time, man. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
Great stuff from Frank. And, I mean, he's switched. He's out. He's done. He's off.
Yeah. And I just wanted to quickly, with the Tom Petty thing, obviously Tom Petty passing away, I had a chance to see him for the first time just a couple of months ago at Bridgestone, and sort of a bucket list thing for me. But, Fitzy, I don't know what sort of an impact he had with you, obviously being a professional musician. My first cassette tape, that's right, kids. I had a cassette tape when I first started listening to music, was the Traveling Wilburys, and that was Bob Dylan, George Harrison, Tom Petty, Roy Orbison, and the other guy. And that's how I learned about music, was Traveling Wilburys and through Tom Petty. So pretty big deal for me and for a lot of people, and just awesome that I got a chance to see him just a couple months ago. And Fitzy, I could not believe, and Julian's been playing his songs every commercial break essentially. It's still hard to imagine a band with 30 years worth of, like, number one hits, like, ever coming around again. Like, I was sitting there watching the concert going, that's 22 songs I know every word to. How is that possible in the modern era of music?
I don't know that sort of will be repeated. I don't know that there's many bands that will be able to do that start now. Tom Petty, the businessman, is actually probably one of the great business inspirations to me. And if you've never seen his documentary on how he handled his career and how he handled the Heartbreakers and how he handled the record labels, it's inspiring and really a reminder that he was smart in front of the microphone, but also behind the scenes. Brilliant, brilliant person, a brilliant musician, and you know, obviously a huge loss for the music community. Totally didn't even think about the fact that, yes, that's two straight years we've lost in losing Prince and losing Petty. We've lost two of the great defining people for a lot of people. So interesting, the halftime discussion. It's a little tease. We're going to get into that at some point soon. We're going to do a mock, I think, on halftime to, halftime performances because there have been so many epic ones. But Frank just gave us a hot take. We'll call it a hot take. The Texans clearly better now off of one game. Clearly better than the Titans. Do you agree with that, Braden? We'll talk about that when we come back. As we go to break, though, Julian, how do you feel about giving away some free stuff?
Oh, yeah, sure. Right.
Let's do it. In honor of talking about this music, let's give away a pair of tickets to see Tedeschi Trucks Band at the Ryman Auditorium Friday, March 2nd, 615-737-1025. Way ahead of the curve on this one. Friday, March 2nd, 615-737-1025. Caller number 5, going to win a pair of tickets. And when we come back, we'll find out if Frank's overreacting or just properly reacting to what we saw on Sunday. We'll do that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5, The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. This is Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5, The Game. So, this is sort of what blows my mind about the way the NFL is right now. Frank Schwab just joined us from Yahoo, and his statement was that the Texans are clearly the better football team, and they obviously were clearly the better football team Sunday. You can't take anything away from that. But how do you value the rest of the body of work? And I use, for example, that things fluctuate so much that on the ESPN power rankings that came out this morning, Tennessee, the Titans fall from 10th to 19th, and the Texans rise up from 17th to 10th. So all of a sudden, at least on the perception of what teams are good, we're now sitting in a situation where the Titans are sitting sort of right at the edge of the bottom third of the league, and that's hard for me to really buy into. Is that hard for you, Braden?
Can I say yes and no? I think if Mariota comes back healthy and misses one game, I think they're good enough to be a wild card team, and that would put them at much better than 19th. They're gonna have to overcome some stuff, but I think their schedule sets up very nicely. But I do think it's hard to look at one game and then ignore the other three games, right? Like it's hard to do that. Sometimes in the NFL, you just get beat. You get your butt kicked, you got to crumple it up, throw it away, and come back the next day. I mean, the Patriots got smoked. Does anyone think the Patriots are going to be the worst defense in the NFL by the end of the season? No, they're going to make adjustments, and they're going to do something to get better, whatever that may be. I think that the Texans, what I do feel comfortable taking away from that is sort of in agreement with Frank in that I do think, because you and I were sort of, the Texans might be the better team anyway, I do think that it's clearly the Texans' division. I mean, that was a statement by a franchise saying, this is our division in our house, and we're gonna take care of business. And so to me, it was more about, hey, we're still the Texans. We're still the two-time defending champions. To me, that doesn't mean that the Titans still can't then go win a bunch of other games. The Colts, if you can get over the Colts hump and beat them twice, if you can beat the Jags twice, which you haven't done in like 8 years, if you can win a couple of other games, you still could absolutely get to 9 or 10 wins and not win the division. So what it tells me is I think the Texans are better than we thought if Deshaun Watson continues to develop the way he has, that they're clearly the top dog in the division, but that if Mariota only misses one game, maybe two, that they still have a shot to get into the playoffs. If that's sort of how I would view it, because I don't think you can just eliminate the really good football they played in the first 3 weeks of the season.
Well, I totally agree with that. I think that what's funny about the Patriots, you mentioned the Patriots specifically, and it's the stat came out the other day that Brady's on pace for whatever, 40 touchdowns, no interceptions, and like 6,000 passing yards. That's how great Brady has been so far this year. And what's funny is that the Patriots defense is on pace to give up more yards than that, passing, more touchdowns. I mean, it's funny how bad that defense has been. It is historically at this point the worst defense ever in NFL history after four games. So I think that there are pieces that you can look at and say, okay, I have a body of work on the Patriots. I can at least make the statement they have something to fix. For the Titans, I don't know that we really have that body of work of some massive problem that you're looking at and saying, here's the failing for the Titans. I think, in week one, they didn't establish the run the way they wanted to establish the run. But that's not some
They came back and fixed it the next 2 weeks.
I'm not seeing some recurring theme where I'm looking at it and saying, well, you know what, the Titans are broken. I see one awful game. So I'm not going to change much about my opinion To your point, it solidifies my opinion that, hey, the Texans are the best team in this division. That's fine. You and I expected that going into the season. But I'm not going to jump off the ship entirely of what I think the Titans can be based off of a 57-14 loss. I mean, that's just
right.
Sometimes that happens.
Yeah, and it's worse than normal. Like, sometimes you get your butt kicked and it's like 31-7, you know, and that like feels like a normal number. 57 just doesn't feel like a normal number. And that is part of the problem. And part of the problem was that they were already at like 40-something when Matt Castle started throwing pick sixes. But I do think that I'm comfortable making an overarching, because this is, you know, you and I talk a lot about first half Twitter, right? Like, we talk a lot about first half Twitter, and it's don't go crazy and overreact in the first half of a football game. Don't fire your coach or bench your quarterback in the first half of a football game. Let the game play itself out. Well, the NFL is sort of like week to week Twitter. Like, it's just the way right. It is. And that, to me, that's what makes it fun. Like, that's what makes it really awesome from a fan standpoint, is you can watch this sport and really have no stinking idea what's coming the next weekend. And that's what the NFL wants. It wants us all on the edge of our seat saying, I have no idea what's coming, but I think my team's got a shot. And that means everyone's interested and everyone's paying attention, and they win because they make the most money that way. But so it's hard to sit back and say, well, I'm still concerned about the secondary for the Titans. But they've had a couple of flashes of brilliance. Not brilliance, but of adequate play. I'm still concerned about Mariota's injury history, but we know he's great when he's on the field. The running game has shown that it's largely in pretty good shape this year. Also had a couple of moments where it was bad. So, like, there's good and bad in everything. And I think the Titans, to me, over a four-game span, still look like one of the teams that's capable of making a playoff run. And so I'm like you. I'm not changing anything too dramatically. I'm more concerned about the secondary this weekend, and I think the Texans are the clear team to beat in the division. Other than that, I don't think there's a grand overarching takeaway from this loss that you can say, hey, that's – like, they could fix a lot of that stuff in 1 week. I think they're going to run the ball well against – I think Miami's pretty good on defense, but I think they're going to do what they did against Jacksonville. It's going to be a slow, plodding first half, and they're going to run the ball well in the second half. I don't know if that's good enough to win, but I think that's what they're going to do. And then I think they're going to come back and try to do the same thing to the Colts, who also, by the way, have a much better defensive line than people think right now. They are improved from last year in that front. But look what Seattle did. Wore them down, and by the end of the game, pulled away. So I think as long, it's all about Mariota. If Mariota's only out for a game, maybe two, then I think it's business as usual, and the Titans have a shot to make a run.
Do you want the most poly-positive take of all time?
From you, why not?
I mean, this is poly-positive right here.
I mean, it's what you do.
Think about it this way. Mariota is so good at so many things that sometimes he's probably like a delicious dessert, like right there on the table. He's so good that you want it, but you know you shouldn't. You know you just shouldn't, right? But you got to because it's
okay,
right
there.
Where
are you there. Going with this?
Well, think about it. Running the ball is really what this team needs to do, and sometimes it's really easy to be tempted by the fantastic.
So that's like the kale salad. Like the kale salad is running the football. You know you're supposed to eat that, but you don't really want to.
Right. So what you've got now in Matt Castle is like stale cookies that were sort of good once and they're not that good now. And you're like, you know what? I could have the stale cookies or I could just stick with the kale salad. The kale salad's ultimately going to get you where you want to go. So maybe right. Poly Positive says by having the decadent four-layer fudge brownie with ice cream and all that stuff on top of it over on the side, maybe because that's not available for a week or two, it sort of gets you back on track with the kale salad.
Because you're looking at kale salad versus stale cookie and you're finally saying, okay, fine, I'll go with the kale salad. It might actually be better. The stale cookie couldn't even start it in college. So
Right. No. And the fact is your trainer's like over on the side looking at your workout buddy's over on the side and is like, you know what? That stale cookie's going to cost you an extra 10 minutes on the treadmill. You're like, not worth it. See, every time they give the ball to Castle and say, do something, Terry Rubisky's like, not worth the extra time on the treadmill. I'll stick to the kale salad. Like, maybe it helps reinstill sort of the pattern and mindset of who the team is. There's your poly-positive take.
A man of 1,000 analogies, Jason Fitz, everybody.
That all have something to do with food.
Food or like music or, like, partying or alcohol. Like, I think those are all the groupings of analogy that you use.
The amount of times I leave the station in the morning craving dessert is really not healthy, and it's because of the show. It's because how often I sit there and say, you know what, that's like a good cake.
And dating, too. You use dating as an analogy. We use dating as an analogy a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
That's because like everybody's
dating and music.
Everybody eats. Everybody's had too much to drink. Everybody knows the temptation of the perfect dessert.
That's
and everybody's
true.
Dated.
True.
Like we're bringing all of this to everybody.
Whatever you say, buddy.
Thank you. Whatever I got to tell myself. Chris Mason going to join us next. You know we're getting close to Preds season when C-Mace gets to join us. Excited about that. We will get Chris Mason's take, as we always do. Especially excited to talk to him going into the season about what he expects from the goaltenders. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds, the goaltending situation, and all things Smashville. Next up on Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. This is Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And really, really excited as it means we're at that time of year, right? There's a time of year, and it feels like we just finished Pred season, but that's a great thing. What you want. It feels like we just got from one season to the next, but having Chris Mason on means that we're right back in the thick of it. C-Mace, thanks for taking some time and joining us this morning, man. We appreciate it. Are you rested, rejuvenated, ready for the season?
Yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be awesome. I'm just, like you said, getting ready to come back on with you guys, and we get to chat about it again. So it's good. I can't wait to see what the guys are going to look like off the right at the start here.
Well, and let's get right into that. I mean, there's obviously been just a few changes, but they're pretty substantial changes. So when you're looking early in the season at this team, what do you look to see from them that will give you an indication of what you expect from them for the season?
Well, the one thing that I'm very interested to see is how Peter is going to start with the lines and the D combinations. I think that's obviously, we know what we have in the Ryan Johansson, the Jofa line, the top line. But other than that, I think there's going to be, maybe some trial and error and try to figure out what combinations work best with the other three lines. And then the D pairings, are they going to split up PK and Matthias Ekholm? And who's going to play with Roman Josi? So very interested to see how that shakes out the first two games. And we'll have to wait until Thursday to find that out.
You know, we've asked a lot of hockey players this, a lot of hockey experts this. I've probably asked you this, C-Mace, but I still am fascinated because I get a different answer almost every time. And that is just how it is you approach an 82-game schedule where you know there's a ton of fan expectation, you feel like you've got a really good team, you want to get off to a hot start, but you also have to pace yourself because it's a marathon. I don't know how, like I said, I get different answers all the time. I don't know how you approach that or address that now coming off a deep playoff run.
Well, I think from what I've heard from the guys, I think they're taking a very intelligent approach, and they realize, like everybody asked, you know, they want to get right back to the Stanley Cup Finals again and relive, all the fans and all of us media folk want to get back there and experience that again. But the guys are, Peter Laviolette really sets the tone with this team, and these guys have really bought in, to their belief system of the team, and they realize if they want to get back there, there's over 100 hockey games to play before getting back there. So they're focused on their start. They didn't get off to a great start last year. They don't want to be in that situation again this year. So they're just focused on the first couple games. You know, obviously Boston is the opening game, and that's all you can play before you play the next game. So they're really disciplined in their message, and I think that helps, you know, you stay on point as a team when you're, you know, trying to play a game. You don't think about trying to get back to the Stanley Cup Finals right now, because you have so many games, and every sports fan, every athlete knows there's going to be ups and downs in the season, but you can try to limit those downs if you have that good mindset, and I think these guys have the right focus going into this season.
We're talking to Chris Mason, former Preds goalie, now with the broadcasting team, and C-Mace, you just mentioned ups and downs. That was sort of part of the definition of this team when we talked to you a lot last year during the regular season. It felt like there was a big ebb and flow to the season. How do they manage that better this year?
Well, I think by, you know, getting off to a good start, I think with the personnel and having, you know, kind of grown and been through that amazing run last year, I think as an athlete and as a team, you have expectations, higher expectations of your team. And every team right now, their goal is to make the playoffs and to win the Stanley Cup. But I know as an athlete before that I never got to the Stanley Cup Finals. I know that you always say that, and that's great that you say that, but you don't actually know that you can get there. And it's a different feeling now that these guys, and you could see it's a different confidence. Once you've been there, and teams that have won the Stanley Cup, they carry themselves differently. They feel differently because they actually know what it takes. They've been to the finals, and I just sense a different confidence in the Predators organization, in the players, in the coaches. Peter's obviously been there. But I just feel their expectations now, they know what that takes, and I think during a regular season can help maybe curb some of those downfalls a little bit and cut it off before it gets before it snowballs into something bad.
So obviously you know what it's like to be between the pipes in the NHL, C-Mace. What is it that you would tell Pekka that right now going into this season from an advice coaching strategy standpoint, knowing that you're probably going to get 50, 55 starts, you want to be limited so that you can be healthy for the for the postseason run. How do you approach that if you're a goaltender?
Well, I think Pekka knows. He's an ultimate team guy. I mean, we all know and everybody you ever talk to, he's one of the most genuine people you ever meet. I think he knows, and for him, again, it's the same thing. He's going to do whatever it takes to get back to where they just were. So if that means, you know, playing a few less games, and I know the team will manage the rotation like they did last year. They really stuck to their game plan, and, you know, UC Saros' play really enabled them to stick to that schedule where it was important to manage Pekka's rest. So he had all the energy, and he was, you know, dealing with a full tank during playoffs, and I think you really saw Pekka play the best hockey of his career at the most, you know, at that, when the stakes were the highest. So I think they are, you know, going to rely on UC to maybe play a few more games this year and really stick to the schedule that they did. But you know, for Pekka, he knows what he's got to do, and I just don't have any worries about him. And there's not really much you need to tell Pekkarinen.
Well, and you mentioned UC. I mean, C-Mace, in fairness, how much do you think we can look at UC and see some sort of a big jump? Is there a jump you expect him to take from last year to this year?
I don't know. That's a tough one because I find when, you know, he's going to have to make some adjustments this year too. I really truly believe he's one of the most talented goaltenders in the NHL. Just his skill level and the way he reads the game and situations, and he's got such a great demeanor about him when he's playing in the net. He's just got this calmness, but it's always a position of constant adjustments because the shooters are going to have a book on UC and they're going to have more video and they've played against them and they're going to make adjustments. And then, you know, he's got to counter that with some adjustments of his own. So I think it's going to be, a good year of another good year of development for him because, you know, he's still a very young goaltender. And he's, you know, I know Ben Vanderklok, these guys, they get on the plane right after the game and they got their laptops out and they're watching every goal and they're watching all the puck handles and they're constantly, you know, trying to make adjustments and just get a little bit better every time. So I know they'll be working hard to deal with whatever comes at them, that's for sure.
Do we need to let you go, C-Mace? You getting pulled over? Everything okay?
No, that was just the neighborhood. I'm just outside. I'm enjoying the elements right now. It's a beautiful day.
I'm fascinated with the young names on this team. Not just the new names, but the young names. Last year we saw Kevin Fiala, Austin Watson sort of grow from not even regulars in the starting lineup to really key contributors at the end of the season. Who can play that role this year?
Well, that's a good question. There are going to be a lot of guys that have opportunities. You know, Sam Girard is a defenseman this year. I've seen, you know, clips and highlights and heard scouting reports on him before, but to see him in action during the preseason and especially the last game that he played against Columbus, against their full roster, he really blew me away. His composure, he plays the game with his head up the whole time, so he just buys himself those extra minutes, never really gets caught off guard or by surprise. So he's a guy, I don't know what they're going to do completely with him because I know he can't play in Milwaukee, so if they do send him down at some point, he'll have to go back to juniors, but he's a really nice player to watch. But and you know, you mentioned the Kevin Fialas, these guys are going to be put in roles and expected to pick up the offense that they lost in the offseason. Mike Fisher, James Neal, that's a lot of goals you're giving up, so they addressed that with Scott Hartnell and Nick Bonino, but there's a lot of guys and a lot of pieces that are going to be new and shiny that you have to figure out where they're going to go and if they can sustain it for an 82-game schedule.
You know, you just mentioned some of that offensive firepower. We're talking to Chris Mason, by the way, former Preds goalie, now part of the broadcast team for the Preds. And let me ask you this. We've been having a bit of a discussion this morning about the right strategy with the top line. Is there some logic in your mind to splitting up the Jofa line and spreading that scoring out to make two lines better, or do you keep everything together for one dominant line?
Well, I just, it would be, I can see maybe, you know, at certain points experimenting with that, and I think Peter tried to do that in the preseason because, you know, the one, they didn't play together in the preseason. I think you have to definitely toy with that possibility, but you know, when I look at it, you have something that they were one of the most dominant lines in the playoffs last year. They played against all the opposition top lines of the best teams in the NHL, and they had great success. So I think, you know, starting off the season, I can't see them not starting with the Jofa line. Having said that, I can see throughout the season when, you know, Peter is a coach that if he sees lines combinations aren't working, he doesn't let it play out until its own demise. He's really quick on changing up those combinations and trying to find different chemistries that might find a spark or work. So I can see that, you know, the conversation of that, but I don't see it right at the start of the season.
Well, it's awesome stuff, you guys. Obviously, you know how much we love him. You can follow him on Twitter, at CMace30. Chris, thanks for coming on. Congrats on everything going on this season, man. We'll look forward to spending a year talking about some awesome Preds with you.
Awesome. Thanks, as always, guys.
Chris Mason joining us. Great stuff from him. And it does raise the question is going to rage on, you know, because we tried all these different line combinations during the course of the preseason. The question is, was that just sort of tomfoolery and trickery, or was that some sort of a sign of things to come? Braden, we'll get your thoughts on that. Also, your thoughts on as much as we've gotten everybody else's thoughts, we need to have the discussion on the MLS stadium and what that looks like. We'll break all that down for you next on Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm learning to fly. You're listening to Braden and Fitz coming at you live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. So, Braden, I'm trying to wrap my head around this, man. Like, you know, trying new line combinations for the Preds, and I know we have plenty of time. We're going to get into Preds talk, but I want to get.
What do you mean? We have time for that?
Yeah, we have all season. Oh. All season to go into. Guys, don't overreact. It's been one game, and the guys overreact. It's been one game. We get to do that.
I like
all
messing
year.
With lines. I like it. Mess with the lines. You know, you can go back to Jofa and Ekholm and Subban. You can always go back to that. Mess with some lines. That, I like it.
You like that, so you don't think that they need like they need tinkering time together, TTT tinkering time.
I don't
together.
Know what to say to that. It feels awfully close to something I should not be talking about.
Well,
no, I just listen. You have a proven commodity, right? Like, you know what the Jofa line is, and when Ekholm and Subban play together, you know that's one of the best defensive pairings in the entire world, nay, the universe. So you know you've got that. So. All right, Ellis is out. You're trying to find some scoring. You're trying to get Bonino, you know, Nick Bonino kind of into a rhythm or whatever. You got Scott Hartnell, too. Like, I'm okay with tinkering a little bit in the front end because you know you can always go back to that if you need to, if that makes any sense.
No, but I do love your nay the universe because you really can't dispute that.
I mean, what are you going to say to that? Huh?
Yeah, we haven't seen any hockey on Mars. We have no idea.
The puck flies much faster.
Yeah, you know, I can't it's funny because we talk so much about how – rhythm matters and how sort of timing matters and these guys got to play together. But you're absolutely right. They spent all year last year doing that. Or not all year, but much of the year last year doing that. You got to feel like those three guys know each other. I still think that this the whole Nick Bonino thing is going to be an interesting development early in the season to figure out what it looks like because he's the guy that they don't – none of these players really know what it's like to play with him. So there's going to be an adjustment period there, if anywhere, to me. That's the one that stands out.
Yeah, and that's what makes Scott Hartnell so weird too, right? Like he's been here. He knows he's played under Laviolette elsewhere, so he knows the coaching staff. He knows Nashville. Like so there is a level of comfort there. He's certainly a veteran. He's been around a long time. I've seen him actually a couple of times around town. Certainly, clearly in much better shape at 35 than I am. There's no question about that. The guy's
he is a professional athlete.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying it looks like he's ready. It looks like he's in midseason form, is what I'm saying about Scotty Hartnell. And I think it's. He'll figure out some, I don't know if his role is second line. I don't know if his role is third line. I don't know if his role is first line. Like, it could be anything. And the beauty of Lavi doesn't sort of sit and let things fester and stew. He likes to tinker. And I'm okay with that during the regular season, especially, you know. So the other argument on this side of this whole equation to our discussion here is, all right, let's go into the season with a proven top line that you know you can depend on every single night, and maybe that mitigates some of the uncertainty elsewhere, right? Like maybe that's sort of the angle.
Give yourself one thing you really know.
Exactly, and we know the blue line's going to be good even without Ellis. We know the blue line's going to be good, so you kind of look at those two things and you go, all right, we think that can win us more times than lose. Like on any given night, we're probably going to win more times than not, as long as we've got Jofa and we've got the blue line, and we've got two good goaltenders. You know, that's a pretty good starting point. So I understand that argument, but you have to play it like a long game. You've got to play it like Chris Mason said. If you get back to the Cup, there are 100 hockey games you have to play between now and then to get back to the Cup. That gives you some room to sort of mix and match and tinker and play and try this and try that, because you never know. Some of the coolest things about hockey is that you – all of a sudden, two guys start skating together, and boom, they turn into this awesome pairing or this awesome line, or you just never know sometimes, and that's sort of the fun of hockey.
Well, it is. It's also funny to me because we're sitting there saying, you can't split up Jofa, which a year ago didn't even exist. So, you know, it is a reminder that, you know, you can't get that rhythm over time. Absolutely. You're right. Speaking of overtime, now that we've seen the MLS stadium out there, we've seen the plan out there, where are you on it now that you've seen an actual rendering, which, by the way, renderings are the sexiest thing.
I want my house
history.
Decorated in renderings. Like, I want it to look like a rendering. I think the $250 million, $25 million upfront fee from the Ingram family and the group to sort of get things started. So $225 in bonds, essentially, that the city is going to issue. Essentially, I don't know if you call it a loan. I don't even know. It's for smarter people to know than us. If that does work out the way it's supposed to, the Ingram group and the ownership group of the potential MLS franchise will be on the hook for roughly 90% of the stadium cost. But Metro would still own it. So if it all works out the way it's supposed to, and again, if you want to read it, Joey Garrison, Tennessean, did a great job. Go read it. You can go in depth. It's a lot of words. It's like thousands of words you can read on the actual financial makeup
words,
of it all.
Words. Yeah, Joey does a great job, by the way.
Yeah, he's great. And you and I are not, like, you probably more so than me with your financial background. But the bottom line is we're not city council planners, and we don't understand how all that stuff works. So go read about it. The gist of it is, if it all plays out the way it's been explained to us in layman's terms, the city will own the stadium and it will be privately funded by the Ingram Group and ownership about 90%. There'll be a tax, $1.75 per ticket put onto the tickets, the sales tax to try to help cover any excess debt that may be there on a per year basis. So if all of that works out, I think it's a great deal for the city because it means we get a potential MLS franchise, and this only happens if we actually get the team, by the way, obviously. So we get an MLS franchise. The Metro owns the stadium and can do whatever it wants with it in the long term, but also doesn't have to pay for building a roughly 28,000-seat state-of-the-art facility. That's a win-win-win-win-win for everybody. And I don't see – again, if it all plays out that way, it looks like a pretty darn good deal for the city and for the team and for the city and for fans of soccer in this city.
Well, and I think that to that point, you've got to look at it and say a little bit of there's still several pieces. As Steve Cavendish said earlier, there's, what, three votes that the council would have to do, and then MLS would have to vote here, too. So there's several pieces that still have to play into before we can start jumping up and down and saying, soccer, soccer, soccer. So we all need to calm down a little bit on that. I'm still nervous, and Julie and I talked about this earlier today. I'm still nervous about a stadium at 27,000 when there's absolutely no proof of concept that that size can be filled. So I just feel like we've picked a number and we've just sort of farted it out. And I don't love that.
Whoa.
I know. Yeah, I went fart. We just farted out a number. And we're like, there we go.
Vomited could have been fine.
Well, vomited better than fart?
About the same, I guess.
These are the deep conversations you only get on Braden. Yeah,
exactly. What's worse, farts or vomit?
Midweek mock.
bodily functions. Midweek mock. Bodily functions. No, I'm more optimistic than both of you guys. And I don't really have anything other than living here for 20 years to base it off of, and that's not really good enough. I think that I've seen national team games grow from 20,000 to 30,000 to 40,000 to 50,000 over the course of the last 10 years. I think we have a massive we had really good high school and prep soccer communities in this state and in the mid-state area I just think that there's a lot of positive. The population growth is incredibly fast and furious right now. I just think that there's a lot of signs that say that we can do it. I think it's interesting that it went from 35,000 to 27,000. That's an interesting thing to note, and that makes it a little more intimate and a little more doable. And maybe that shows tips their hand as to what they're expecting, maybe some to some degree. So I think it can be done.
Yeah, he says the concern is that there's never really been a professional team here. Yes, you're going to have Nashville SC in the USL next year playing over at First Tennessee Park, but you don't. He's talking about the proof of concept of having, you know, people go out to see a professional soccer team play 17 times a year.
I get it.
Yeah, U.S. Men's House team's here. Awesome. Man City and Tottenham's here. Awesome. You should want to go see those games. That hardly ever happens. But those are like one. Those are just minor events that happen.
Right. And they're one-offs.
There's other cities out there that are also bidding that have had exactly the same success going to see national teams play. And won't even get 2,000 people out to go see a USL team that's in first place.
Well, everybody else's city sucks. So
yeah, I guess
I'm kidding. It'll be interesting to see what happens with First Tennessee Park and to see how that works with Nashville SC and everything. The other thing to consider here is how many of us are looking for things to do in June, July, and August. I mean, all of us are looking for sports things to do during that time of the year. So. That's something else to consider. It's you're not asking people to not go to a Titans game or not go to a Vols game or not go to a Commodores game or don't go to a Preds game. You're kind of asking people, especially with kids, hey, what are you going to do on a July Friday night or a June Thursday night? Or like there's not a lot going on. You got music in the city and then random things to do. But from a sports standpoint, it will be by far the biggest, most important and interesting thing going on in our city.
Well, it'll be an interesting debate for us to continue, and we will continue as this thing comes to fruition. Just remember, if you see somebody tweet something about soccer and you think it's real, check with Julian Council first. That's the real lesson we all learned yesterday. Check with Julian Council first. 3D coming up next. I don't know what they're doing. It'll be better than what we just did. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council back there. Thanks for listening to Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game, guys. Do it again tomorrow.